And this year, we did it by over 100 average attendance in a Thursday night meeting. And because that was our objective, and everybody on staff knew it. Because before you're going to have disciples, which is what we're talking about on down here, you've got to have some people to work with. Because there are going to be some in this bunch, and all they'll ever do is come to the BSU and meet the girl they're going to marry. And that's about all the help you'll ever give them. And there's some of these, as someone has said, they're looking for temporary relief and not permanent help. And there's a fantastic difference. Now, if we could flatten this triangle like it should be, it would really look much more like this. You know, I'm not much of an artist, as you can tell. But the further down you go, there's going to be loss of people. Now, these people we're going to minister to, we're going to love them, we're going to help them. But out of this, we're looking for those who really mean business that will go further for the Lord if they really get the help they need. And see, ordinarily, this is not where, like in most BSUs, if you'll notice the other little triangle here, and it's really out of proportion, but between most BSU directors, there's a BSU director and a bunch, and there's nothing between the BSU director and the bunch. Now, he may have a council, but what does that council basically do? It helps him to program for the bunch. But there's not the stair-stepping that there needs to be of people that he's meeting with or helping others who are helping others. And I'll share with you how this has worked on our own campus. So the ministry to the bunch, I think, is primarily a helping ministry. And you may want to write that down. You can write all over that triangle. It's primarily that, and if you'll notice down there when we talk about it, let me just read this to you and let's talk about it. All right, the bunch. Get a good, healthy bunch. Teach them. Have a good, sound, biblically-based program of evangelism, Bible study, follow-up missions. Now, if you have a discussion every other day on war and peace and some of these areas, which they may need some exposure to, you're going to produce the kind of student who's going to question basically everything and not think there's anything you can know for sure. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have some of these things in your program, but I think you ought to build your program on the Bible, where the students begin to see where you get some of your answers, and a good, solid, biblically-based thing. And this is what we have seen, that if you will give them the kind of program based on Bible study, evangelism, missions, the things that really matter, this is what will be used of God, I think, to really turn some students on. And then supplement your program with these other aspects to give it some rounding out. Provide a healthy, warm atmosphere for growth and discipleship to take place. It is out of this group that you begin to get those who become disciples. Through giving them individual personal attention as well as a good solid program, you begin to help them to grow. Now, let's talk about some things we can do up in this area, and you can write out beside that if you'd like. One thing is, here we're thinking about through our devotional meetings. We'll talk about some organizational things we can do to build this bunch. Devotional meetings. On our campus, we have what we call a Vesper thing, a Thursday evening meeting. And we really try to make that a rallying point. The students know when they come, they'll be getting something. And this last fall, we were having start out with around 400 in that meeting. And over 100 more than we had the year before, because we really went after the bunch. We were going to increase the bunch, because if you're going to, you need to do this and have some excitement in that group. And then through dorm Bible studies. Now, for example, I put dorm in front of the Bible studies. With the athletes, for example, they're not able to come to most of our meetings. They're still working out for football another time. But last year, out of 45 on the freshman football team, we were having 30 in weekly Bible study. And it's a result of meeting in the dorms. And now, I know when I started, we had one athlete that came to First Baptist Church, and some time ago I could sit in church and count 17 on the football team in First Baptist Church Norman. But we started over in the dorm, and here there's a principle I think to start with, and it's the with them principle. Jesus went out with them. Where did he call Peter? In the synagogue, right? Absolutely not. What was Peter doing when Jesus said, "Follow me"? Fishing. Where was Matthew when Jesus called him? In the synagogue, right? Absolutely not. Out on his daily task. We started 4 years ago with one fellow that we knew in a football dorm, and we went with him. And when he could meet, he got out of study hall, freshman study hall, at 10 o'clock. So I went to the dorms at 10 o'clock at night to minister to freshmen. They had one other night, but they didn't have to go to study hall, so that was my night. And so for weeks I met with them. One of the first times a guy came to Vespers, and I was there, and he asked somebody, he said, "Who's the director?" And they said, "He is." And I'd been meeting with him for weeks, and he didn't know that. And he didn't need to know it. He was a Methodist. But he's one of the solidest fellows we have right now, doing a tremendous job, and goes to First Baptist Church every time he goes to church. Now, the thing of it is, go with them. And I think this is one of the real fallacies in BSU today and in the church. We build our box, and we say to the outside world, "Come in. And if you want help..." Well, we do this basically in the church. We don't say it, but people get this idea. If you want church help, it's available 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings, 7:30 on Sunday night. Wednesday night, if you want it, you come get it then, because that's the only time we're going to offer it. And that is dead wrong, contrary to the New Testament from the word go. It was not come, it was you go and get with them. So this, in the idea of the bunch, first of all, I think there needs to be some outreach to them.
What does that mean, bunch?
Well, most of the ones that come to the regular would be a pretty high percentage. But our objective here is to help the Christian. It's not an evangelistic meeting. And I've seen through the years that if you'll help the Christian, even when you've got non-Christians in the group a lot of times, you'll find that that really interests them. Like a fellow came up one night and he said, "Boy, I really enjoyed coming over here." He said, "This is really a different group." And I began to talk with him. He's not a Christian at all, but he's seen the excitement and the love among them. And we've had so many students to say, "Well, I came over and I saw the love of the group and the fellowship and everything, and so as a result of that, that really planted a seed, and then somebody could witness to them." I think here you're not going to draw too many non-Christians in your student center. I mean, I don't think you are. If you do, you're doing an unusual job.
I might make a comment on a computer basis. We have a noonday devotional 3 days a week, and that's where we have our lunch.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And this commuters.
Yeah, commuters, I think a noon time is, you know, one of the best times to do something with. Now, one thing, the next step, and I wish we had a larger section drawn between those. You notice there's a little line. But now, our objective is to get people from the bunch to become disciples. And there's a fantastic difference between a bunch and a disciple. And so it's our objective to get people from the bunch coming down in here to become real disciples. Now, if you will pick up that profile of a disciple, a BSU disciple, I want to show you something, and I want to warn you about something. You see this little sheet that says profile of a disciple? This is for you and for you alone. Now, don't go back and mimeograph this and start passing it out to the kids for a number of reasons. One of is the fact that some people are going to react. They say, "Oh, yeah, you got it all worked out. You just pour the guy in a mold." This is not the idea of this tool at all. It's an evaluation tool. I'm working with a student. He doesn't even know I have this. And I begin to think, all right, one of the things that I think is important is he's beginning to develop, like the second point, a developing awareness of Christ's presence in his life and an increasing dependence upon God. And I'm working with that student. I ask myself a question. Do I think old Joe here, does he have an awareness of Christ's presence in his life? Well, maybe he doesn't. And so I need to do a Bible study with him on that area. But this is not the little mold you pour everyone into. Now, some of you may not agree with this profile. You do not have to, because you're not working with it. See? But when I mention the word disciple, if we went around and I say the word disciple, every one of you immediately, you have some kind of a concept of what a disciple is. It may be a bad concept, but you've got one. And so what we've tried to do is think and pray and do a study and look into the scriptures and come up with one that we think is biblical. And it's just like someone says, you know, you're a witness for the Lord. It may be good or bad, but you are, see. And so this is true of when I say the word disciple. You have something in your mind. Now, if Jesus said, "Go into all the world and make cabinets," somebody ought to have a blueprint as to what a cabinet would look like. Isn't that right? If Jesus had said, "You go into all the world and make automobiles," and you have a concept of an automobile and I have one, somebody else has one, good night, what a mess, see? And so, like I say, you may not agree with all this, and if you want to improve on it or throw it away, that's fine, but don't go share it go around sharing it with everyone. Now, we're planning this. When people come to this, the stage in our BSU in which they're disciple makers, then we're going to give them one of these and say, this you can use. But our students have not seen this. The only guy that's seen it is the one student who helped mimeograph it. And we've sworn the staff secretary, if I find this in students' hands, somebody's going to be in trouble. Just due to the fact that people tend to react to some kind of a form. See, you see the idea? And maybe I'm putting that a little strong, but I think there's a real danger of people say, oh, I wonder if, you know, who measures up? But this helps you to evaluate and to think. Now, you can look at some of these things, and I won't go through them. I think you can read and hear some verses. But do you understand the idea? If I'm going out into the world to build something, I'd like to know what one would look like when I got through. Now, this doesn't mean you pour them in a mold. They'll have the same personality characteristics in a lot of ways they had when they're really mature in the Lord that they had when you first met them. So it's not that you're trying to pour them in a mold, but it's the idea, hear things that I think the Word of God teaches it's important in the life of a disciple. And therefore, when I'm working with a guy, I'm going to be sure I hit on those points. See, I see students who have been in BSU for 3 or 4 years. I remember one time in Dallas, I knew 3 former state BSU presidents, and they were living in an apartment house, and they had not the foggiest idea how to influence people in that apartment house. Somebody goofed when it came to evangelism in their lives. So this helps me to evaluate. And so this is something our staff has worked out at OU, and we think it includes the basic things that's involved in the life of a disciple. So I hope you'll use it, and I hope it'll be helpful to you. Now, in getting people to come from here, now we're going to help them as much as we can in the meetings. And Jesus did that. He preached to the 5,000. He helped people. But it's my objective to get people measuring up more or less to this profile. I want to see godly men and women who know how to pray, you know, who know how to witness and do this type of thing. So this is what I'm shooting for. Now, the process of getting a guy from here to here, the thing you want to major on in getting him from here to here is his personal development or personal growth. Personal development. That is going to be my major. I'm not primarily trying to get him to be on a council or organize or paint posters. You know, I may use him sometimes in those ways, but the thing I'm majoring on is helping him. And I want him to know this. I want to help you. We put out a little deal that goes out to the students when they first come, a little brochure we give them. Many organizations on this campus will want your services. But our objective, we want you for one reason, primarily. We want to help you. Now, that's what we're after, see? And so we're going to do everything we can to help him to become a disciple. Because Jesus said that's what we better go into the world and do. Now, we can have little, that's under the big main tent, you can say, is making disciples. You can have all the little sideshows and music groups and all this you want to. And some of them can maybe help you do this, but you better be shooting for making disciples. Now, during this, I'm going to major on his personal development through seeing that he's in dorm Bible studies, through Vespers, through retreats, trying to design the kind of program that will help him to grow. But then another thing is to begin to see that he gets individual personal attention. And this is where I think many times in our BSUs we really lose out is the individual personal attention. Right? You could say to me, how would you do that? Like at OU with some 400 in Vespers and we had nearly 800 in dorm Bible studies last year. We had about 100 Bible studies. We tried to have about 8 in them. Some had 4 or 5, some had 10 or 12. But that was what we were trying to do. And how am I going to help 800? And see, this is where we often fail, I think, as directors. There's no way that I can meet and counsel with 800 students. But I want those 800 students, as many as possible, to get individual personal attention because they have individual personal problems. And so one of the ways we're going to do that is we're going to try to develop out of this bunch disciples. Now, you know what it takes to make a disciple? It takes a disciple maker. I mean, that makes sense, doesn't it? If I were to say, all right, Jesus said, go into all the world, make soap. What does it take to make soap? Soap makers. See? Or going to all the world, make cabinets. It takes cabinet makers to make cabinets. I mean, that just makes sense. And therefore, I think it's God's will for every single Christian to come to the point that he's a disciple maker. So this doesn't let anyone off the hook down here. Because if he said go in the world and make disciples, that's the kind of people it's going to take to make disciples will be disciple makers. Some will be more effective at it due to gifts and other things. But God wants every person to come to the point where he is a disciple maker. And that's what we're going to be working at. And eventually, that's where you ought to give the primary part, I think, of your time as far as your personal ministry is concerned, is trying to make disciple makers. Now, the disciple maker, see, once a person meets his profile, now once I feel like he meets the profile of a disciple, the thing we try to do is band them into teams. One of the important things at this stage is a team. Now, there's a difference between the team and the bunch. Up here is just a bunch. A team has, there are several characteristics of a team. One, it has an accepted leader and a common objective. You don't have a team if you don't have a common objective. That's why sometimes a group can meet as a Bible study group and things like this, and maybe some, you know, different ones share it in it. But that's not a team. That's a group, and it's a Bible study group. And so, you know, there's such things as bunch and gang and group. And see, like we come here today, we're a group or gang or bunch or whatever you want to call it. But a team, when a person basically meets this profile, we want to band him into a team. And the objective of that team, see, like up here, the first thing I said was personal development. The second thing back up in this stage when we're working on him becoming a disciple is production. We want the guy to produce. And I'm talking about we want him to begin to learn to share his testimony, and that's one of the things we work on here. We try to help him, first of all, to have assurance of his salvation. I mean, a lot of them, like we try to start right at the first year. Last year, we thought we have 26 Vesper services. What are 26 most important things we think a freshman ought to hear? We thought assurance of salvation is one thing, because they really have some problems with that. So we started working on those things, and his personal learning to share his testimony. So we work on these areas in trying to get him to become a disciple, his devotional life. And a lot of this we'll get into in more detail. Once that person more or less meets a profile or is meeting the profile of a disciple, we'll band him into a team in which the team leader will be a disciple maker. Someone, and a disciple maker is one who's already made a disciple. I mean, there's one around that we can actually see who's met this profile as a result of this guy's life. And that's the way you know when you have a disciple maker. When there are disciples around who've been made, God's used this guy to make them, primarily. And then we make him the leader of a team, and we'll have three or four guys on the team, and the objective of that team, number one, see up here it was personal development, here's production. Here, then the number one objective is production. We want to use him, if you want to put it that way, we want to develop his ministry skills in the area of witnessing, and really having a ministry, learning to lead dorm Bible studies and things like this, such that that guy can really produce. And then we're also going to work on his personal growth. You know, just like with you fellas, if that bothers somebody to say, well, production first. Well, if you've got your priorities straight, I would think that number one, your number one priority would be your relationship to God. And number two would be your relationship to your wife. Number three would be your children, and number four, the BSU. Now, BSU, if you have children, is number four, and I feel like as far as my priorities, it's number four. Does that mean it's not important? I don't give any time to it? No. It just means that I have my relationship to God, and if you don't have that, you're not going to have much of a ministry, regardless of what your state director thinks or somebody else sees. You really want a lasting ministry. You want. And if you don't have a good relationship with your wife and children, because someone said, what is your ministry? You go out in the world and tell people how it works in your relationship with God, your relationship with your family, and that is your ministry. And if you don't have the foundation, you'll really get in trouble when it comes to the production aspect. So, the thing we're trying to do here is band them into a team in which we have a leader, and these guys hit it out in the dorm, in dorm Bible studies, production-oriented. We want to develop his ministry skills, teach him how to witness, take him with them. And so that would be done by a team leader who would be a disciple maker. And then really, ultimately our chart would go on down, and here would be you as a director. Now, let me show you how this works practically, because it's really worked for us, and we're excited about it. Even before I knew to put it in a triangle like this, we started a few years ago, and I want to back up and share a little bit more with you. But even after, there was a time in which I met with five people for Bible study, five people. And my Bible study consisted of these five people. And then I led one other on the side over among athletes. It was just a Bible study group, and I led that. And when I came to the University of Oklahoma, we had one Bible study. We had two that I knew of that were going on any kind of a regular basis. And so I met with these five people for Bible study. And then these five people at the time, and you could not, and I'll back up and tell you what we did as students. This was after a period of time. But each one of them, we asked to have five people and go to five people. First of all, I asked them, would you tell me the name of one student that you think has potential for really being used of God if they got the help they needed? I said, now you pray about it and come back tomorrow and tell me one student that you feel like, if you really would give your life to them, they have real possibilities. So each one came back and told me one student. I had each one of them to do this. And then I said, all right, now you go back and tell me the name of one other. And so they did, until each one of them had five. And so then they went to these five people and said, I want you to be on my team, and here's what it'll cost you to be on my team. It'll cost you 7.5 hours a week, because I want you to spend 3 hours in personal Bible study. I want you to be in a Bible study that'll take 1.5 hours. I want you in turn to lead a Bible study, and I want you to be in the Thursday night Vesper service. And so this is basically what they did. And then they told, once these people committed themselves to them, then this staff member would meet with those five. He would have others, some responsibilities, but this is where we want you to give your life. Regardless of whatever else you do, you're primarily responsible to give your life to those five people. Now, I was still director. I could still, you know, meet or counsel or do other things. But I felt like my team primarily was made up of these five, and that I should work primarily with these people. And then each one of these, when they went to them and asked them to be on a Bible study, they said, you select three students that you think would really come along if you'd give your life to them. And so they selected three. And then this person's Bible study was made up of those three people. And when they went to these people, we said, we want you to lead a dorm Bible study in the area where you live. And so each one of them were then to select a Bible study of eight. And when we did that, we had, like this year, I lead two Bible studies, and yet we have 100 Bible study groups going. Now, this was after our staff group. When I first came to the University of Oklahoma, I asked, after being there, and we had devotional meetings, and I began to look around, and I spotted some guys. I first announced a Bible study for some men, from just the boys around. So we started with a Bible study of about 10 or 12, and meantime, I was watching to see the guys that were most interested. And out of that, I went to some fellows sometime later and asked them if they would be in a Bible study. And I said, now, if you are going to be in this study, it'll take you 10 hours a week or 10.5 hours a week to be in this group. And so they did. These five fellows committed themselves, and before they ever registered, I told them when I wanted them, and they registered for that time. And we spent 10 hours a week. We spent time in Bible study, prayer, and taking those guys into the dorm. Now, that spring, to my knowledge, we had five students on our campus to become Christians, and it was a result of these five fellows. Now, out of those five, four of them are BSU directors today. The other one is working on the campus as a layman and is planning to go into BSU work at a later time. Now, see, I don't feel like I call them into BSU, but I've noticed something through the years, and I remember a youth director telling me, you go to a youth program someplace where there's being some depth built into people's lives, you'll find an amazing amount of people being thrust out because God wants people. Well, the point of it is we spend a lot of time together just helping those guys. See, I knew if I cannot affect the lives of five students at Oklahoma University, how am I ever going to affect that whole mass of people? And before you have much of an impact on your campus, you've got to be able to affect the life of at least one deeply, or you're not going to have much of an impact on your campus. And so this was basically the idea. And so that's the way we operate. I feel like I ought to give my time primarily to these students who are most advanced. See, if every year I run back here and start meeting with freshmen, and then the next year I run back, and see, this is basically what we have. It's more or less what we have in a church. It's what we have in the BSU. We've got the pastor, and he may have some deacons and people for organizational responsibilities, even Sunday school teachers. But normally, there's not anyone. So we add a person. He comes in the BSU. We just add it, put him in the bunch. And he stays in the bunch for 4 years. He goes to Glorieta. He goes, comes to Vespers. But nobody is spending individual, personal time with him training. And I feel like that I should be the best qualified person in the BSU to build in depth in the lives of these. And then they, in turn, build in the depth, of the lives of these people. So this year, we had far more people around than we've ever had. And the amazing thing about them, many of them were getting individual, personal attention. And I saw people, they were coming to BSU, growing like weeds, witnessing. And I'd never spent any time with them. Now, see, they know if somebody up here wants to come in and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about something, fine. But see, this is the way we reproduce ourselves. And I believe that's what we ought to be up to as BSU directors. And we'll talk into more specifically as to how, but I want you to get a general overall picture. Now, a lot of times when you talk about meeting with a few people, say, well, yeah, but what about all these people? Well, hey, Jesus chose 12 and spent 3 years with them. And most commentaries say the further Jesus went in his ministry, the more time he spent alone with the 12. Well, why didn't he care about the world? He did care about the world. I know a lot of people probably thought, well, why? And I even heard some people that questioned, why would you go to the athletic dorm and spend all the time you spent over there? Because I spent 3 nights a week over there for 2 years. Normally, I spent 3 nights a week. I'd go over there many times around 7:30, and I'd come out at midnight. And I began, basically, with one fella, and it took me from September to February to get him to memorize his first verse. Now, that's the truth. But he was a four-point student. He's made 1B in his entire life. He had tremendous potential. Now, I'm not talking about just going after those. The number one thing I'm looking for when I'm looking for a person to work with, and I'll share some of these things with you, or maybe you just want to jot down now. Number one thing is a heart for God. Well, a guy, does he have a heart for the Lord? And I think a lot of times we tend to look at the Sharpies, you know. Well, a heart for God's number one. That's the first thing I'm looking for in a fellow. I want him to have a heart for the Lord. Number two is to be available. When you find a student on your campus taking the full load, he's married, he's pastoring the church, and working 40 hours a week, you forget it. You can help him, have meetings and come to help him, but don't try to train him. He is not available, and you cannot train a man unless he has some time available. Now, I remember like with this student I'm talking about. He's a four-point student. He played football. His schedule was unbelievable, but I could get time with him. You know, he did have to eat dinner on Sunday, and sometime he'd eat at our house, or various other deals, you know, whatever the deal was. I could get time with him. I found out that there were things that I could do to serve him, and different things, in order to get time with him. And so I found out he had errands to run and things like this. Well, if he's got to go to the post office, I'll just go to the post office with him. And we'd visit on the way. And this is the thing I just encourage you. Don't ever go anyplace. Normally, don't go anyplace by yourself. If I'm in the BSU and I've got an errand to run, I can wait until some student comes in. See, that can be productive time, to just getting time with them. There's no substitute for that. Number one is a heart for God. Number two is availability. Number three is teachability. Teachability. If he will not, if he's closed, he's a young evangelist that's already preached all these revivals, he's got it all figured out. I'm sure you'd run into a lot of these on a denominational camp. He is as closed as Fort Knox when it comes to anybody teaching him anything right now. Well, don't waste your time. Now, I don't mean that you don't love them, and you see, you're going to have things they can come to. Man, let him come to all the meetings and help him. But when it goes to giving your life to God, you better give it to someone who will pay off, because if not, you've wasted all those time. And then one thing, of course, he needs to be capable. And of course, most of them on the college campus are. Don't go to the mental institution to try to get your samples. Now, if you want to have a mission team out there, we have a cerebral palsy center. Kids go out there teaching Bible stories, but when I want to go choose people to work with, I don't primarily go. Now, that may sound hard to some of you, but it's a hard, cold fact. And Jesus went after 12 young men, and that's what I'd encourage you to do. Not that you don't love people. See, we're going to love the whole world. We're going to help many, but we're going to train a few.
You've been mentioning men all the time. Do you work with girls on a campus too?
Well, I did at one school where I was. I picked two girls. Both of them are missionaries today. And so I do. But normally, I try to give my time primarily to the fellows, and we have tried to train some girls to work with them. Because I think, in a way, you're limited what you can do with a girl. Now, don't any women lib people get upset, but you are. She's got problems. She wants a girl to talk with. And I think sometimes over a period of time, there will be some you'll need to meet with to start with. But, boy, I would work as fast as I could at getting someone to help me with the girls' ministry. So we do, right now, have people that work on our staff just with girls. I mean, we have two girls. We've had three this past year. People say, well, we couldn't do that. Well, you might could if you ask God for them. But I think you're limited, you know. I remember somebody, we have a ranch we lease, and somebody said, well, I wish we had a ranch like that. Well, I'd planned to have a ranch before I ever left Dallas to move to Norman. I just planned on it. I knew there was a place around there somewhere. I didn't know how long it'd take God to give it to us, but I knew we'd have it. People say, well, boy, I wish we could have eight on the staff. Well, have you ever asked God for them? See? Now, I'm not trying to be ugly, but I'm just saying there are things that a lot of times we don't do because of limited vision. And so, but you may work with girls, but Jesus, they followed him around, they ministered to him, but what? How many of the disciples were women? Now that sounds hard, but we've got girls running out our ears all over the place because we started with fellows, and then later we got someone who could help the girl. But Margaret Shelton, who used to be with us at the University of Washington, when she went out there, she went after men. And she said, if you get the men, you'll get the girls. It's not a matter of neglecting them, but it's a matter of where, when you're by yourself, are you going to start, you know. So you start with the fellows, and they're going to date the girls anyway. And most of the fellows I know, the girls primarily got the help through the fellows. But don't neglect them. But primarily, I'd go after men. I really would. I was a BSU director for 5 years at two girls' schools. So I'm not against the girls, and we work with them. But a lot of it I did over the phone, and I did it in twos, you know, because, and it worked. And so we helped them, but there are some limitations there. Okay, does that make sense or any question at this point? Now see, you always got to be thinking in terms of what do I want 4 years from now? See, we start planning for the freshman now. Right now, we're thinking in terms of, God, what do we want 4 years from now? And 4 years from now, I want disciple makers. I want kids who, when they graduate, the rest of their life, wherever they go, they can make disciples. And I know fellows like this, like Brett Yons here. We had 2.5 years with Brett. He went to the University of Miami, 80% Jewish and Catholic. The BSU director down there, by his own admission, said, I did not know what to do. He went down there and spent less than 2 years. When he came back, he brought 20 students back with him one summer that he had reached. Some of them had been on dope, drugs, various things. Some of them were church kids. And out of those 20, he held a training program for them. 10 of them transferred to the University of Oklahoma because he was leaving. They wanted some help. And at least 5 of them will wind up in full-time Christian work, I feel pretty certain. And you can put him down anywhere in the world, and you go back in 3 years from now, and there will be disciples and disciple makers. You can't put him in a world where that won't happen. He may have to learn a language and things, but that will happen because he's got this on his heart. And so that's what we want to produce, the kind of people who can go out in the world and get a job done. Now, and I think right here, and the reason, the way I saw this drawn, it was up here, the director at the top. And we invert that because I think that's where it all, because what you are is your servant to all these people above you. And it's not a hierarchical step. It's mean you've got to give your life more to these people than anybody else does. See, and so you're serving them. These people are serving them, and right on out here. And boy, that is so thrilling because we look at BSUs and a campus of, 18,000, and people think, man, if you had 200 in a meeting, you're fantastic. And see, that this is another concept. I look at our student center, and we can get 400 in there about any way we pack them in. Unless we open the downstairs, which we may have to do with some closed-circuit televisions or something. But across the street, there are 20,000 students. Now, there's no conceivable way we're going to get those 20,000 in that building. And And I remember someone saying, talking about a pastor in Texas, he said, you know, and he called this man's name, said, I really think he'd like to win the whole world to Jesus if he could get him sitting in the corner of his church on Sunday morning. Now, I'm not belittling a fact, because now we have athletes that are coming, but we had to start out with them. Now, another thing, see, up here I said it's with them. When you get down into this area, it's with him. Jesus ordained 12 that they should be with him. When I begin to work with a guy in air training, it's not that I'm rushing after his schedule and I'm always running to his dorm, but I begin to fit him into my schedule. And that's not a pride thing, it's just a fact. After a period of time, I met with Joe Wiley over in the dorm, and so we met for some time, and then we got to where I'd go by and I'd say, hey Joe, can we get together this week? He said, yeah, I'm real busy till Thursday. He said, I'm out at 10 o'clock, I have off from 10 to 12, and I said, well, could you come by the office? Another night, the quarterback, starting quarterback at OU, is over my house for 3 hours, because we've been meeting together. One of the guys has helped him. We helped Joe Wiley. And I told Joe, I went over there, and the year Steve Davis was a freshman, I said, now, Joe, I want you to know something. If Steve Davis doesn't make it, it's going to basically be your fault. Now, I know he's got some responsibility, but I'm talking about the help, because I want you to know right now, I am not going to train Steve Davis. And if you don't do it, it's not going to be done. Because you live here, and I've tried to teach you, I know, and what you do is you work with him. And so he did that, and boy, that guy came along, and now he's had a Bible study this year, and God has really used him. So it's the idea. Now, he knows that he can come by, and sometime when I was over, I'd go by Steve Davis's room, but I did not meet with Steve Davis on purpose. And Joe's met with him, and man, he has grown like a weed. And see, that's the idea. Always you helping them so they in turn can help others. Now, that's what Jesus did. Now, in case some of you feel like, well, there's a choosiness here. I remember a pastor one time we were talking to him, and he said, Max, that won't work in the church. I said, I don't believe that. I don't think Jesus would have told us to do it if it wouldn't work. And I said, have you ever learned Luke 22, 31 and 32? And now listen to this verse. Jesus is talking to Simon and the disciples, and he said, Simon, Simon, Satan has desired to have you, and this is plural. It's in the Greek, it's plural. He's desired to have all of you disciples that he may sift you as wheat. But he said, Simon, I have prayed for you. And this time it's singular. And he said, when you're converted, or literally when you get straightened out, you strengthen the brethren. Now, the Son of God was chosen. Now, not cliquish, because remember, have we neglected this bunch? Not at all. We know right now what the topic is for May 9th for our Vesper service, and we found one of the best things we can do is use our staff, and those people are digging, and the students said it's by far the best Vespers we've had, and we've had them come in from all over the country, and some of the best meetings we have are our staff, because they know months ahead, they pray, they do Bible study. And when those kids come to Vespers, they know before they ever get there, there'll be a handout given to them like if it's on a devotional life on that topic before they leave. We've developed Bible study to go with it, Sunday school lesson, all this on every topic. So for that week, when he goes to his darn Bible studies on the same subject it was dealt with in Vespers, his Sunday school lesson's on it, he gets a handout on that lesson and he's encouraged to memorize one verse along that line. Now that's what we did last year. If some of you are wondering if the studies are available, they are not now. I hope by next summer we will have a whole series that will be printed and available to you. Brett Young and some of them are working on a series now that really look good. These we've needed these for a long time, growing in Christ, and these are just, I'm sorry they're not available. They're going to do a trial run on them for a year, but there will be a series of Bible studies, we hope by next year, that would be available to all of you. But the point of it is, it's what you're doing in all this time. You're sharing with a person what you're doing. Now, when Jesus prayed for Peter, it was so that Peter, in turn, could help the others. And that's it. He spent all night in prayer. Luke tells us, Luke 6:12, he went aside and prayed all night. Went aside to mount, continued all night in prayer. And you read back in Mark 3:13, he called all his disciples together, and out of these, he chose 12. Now, I cannot find in the Scriptures anywhere where Jesus was accused of neglecting the masses for the 12. Because we use these people constantly to minister to them. So these people up here get more help than they've ever had. But it's not from me. And see, that makes sense. And some of you know I'm on sabbatical now. Someone said, well, how's it going at OU? And I can honestly tell you, better than it's ever gone. And I haven't been there since January, except just in and out. When I do that, I don't go for staff meetings or anything. If you can be on a campus and at the end of 6 years you have not trained your replacement, something's probably wrong with your ministry anyway. Because that's constantly what we ought to be doing, training people to work with others. Now, personal life, and what do you do with these people? But this helps me as far as a framework. And sometimes we sit down and we look over these profiles and we think, all right, how many disciples do we have, we think, at OU? Well, so many. How many disciple makers? And when we see the number of disciple makers that we have, we know basically what we can do in some of the other areas as far as number of Bible studies and things like this. And this person down here is the director, and we call him, for lack of a better term, leader of disciple makers. The day may come in which that would happen on your campus. You would have one guy watching over a number who are disciple makers, but I doubt that that'll happen much in a four-year period on a campus. But I have fellows right now that I'm trying to do something that with who are, they're leaders of disciple makers, or they will be soon. And so this makes sense. It seems to me that you're the best qualified person. You know, you should know more about the Lord. You ought to know more about how to walk with God. So why don't you help the more advanced students? And some people say, well, where's the council in all this? And that type of thing. Well, personally, we don't work. We don't have a council. And the reason for it, we're built around the Bible study groups. We get more work done than we've ever had. If we want somebody to come over and set up tables, well, we tell three of the Bible study leaders to bring their group, and that's 24 people, and that's all you need to set up the tables. Now, another thing that we have found, that the danger of it is a lot of times in the council, here's a sophomore student in charge of evangelism, or even a junior. God's called you there to do something. He's not mature enough to have the burden to plan the program of evangelism on that campus. He cannot handle it. He's not that mature. And yet you place basically the direction of your program in his hand. And for years, that bothered me deeply. And I know you work with them and you counsel with them and you help them, but I also know that there's some real problems there. And another thing we found, our week on the council meeting, our week with the director, he's supposed to meet his committee an hour a week, get individual time with them, the people on his committee. Now let's suppose that he just spends 1 hour a week doing that, not with every individual, but just 1 hour. That's another hour. And now as a result of all those meetings, he's still done nothing but talk, absolutely nothing but talk. Now, whatever the job is, if they're going to paint posters or pass out posters in the dorm or whatever, then the work's got to be done. And already, you've taken them probably four or five hours a week. And then when you go to that person, say, will you be in a Bible study? Will you lead a Bible study? Will you meet individually the people in your Bible studies? And he gets that and thinks, well, I thought Mom sent me here to go to school. And so basically, the thing we're finding that students are responding, because we do that primarily. We plan, we pray, we get students' ideas. The students are more involved than ever. That was their suggestion. And as a result of it, when we're getting with them, it's primarily we are helping them, not using them. And I know so many students know how to organize committees. They don't know how to evangelize. They know how to give a devotional. But man, they don't have the foggiest idea once they get out how to make disciples. Now, I'm not saying you ought to do away with that, but you may give that some thought. And I found when we wanted to get something done, like summer mission offering, we used to spend untold hours getting that thing together. I remember one day, I came in, I hadn't been there long, and the associate said, well, the missions chairman's sitting out on the front porch crying, could you go out and talk with him? Well, what's the deal? Well, we're going to have a car wash for summer missions this Saturday, and put dirt in little sacks and put them on cars, and now it rained. You know, God fouled up the whole summer mission deal. Well, and we had a little ticker tape, and we sold buck of the month. I mean, all that stuff used to drive me up a wall. We didn't have time for evangelism. Trying to get summer mission off and get. So one time, I was meeting with these five guys, and any time I wanted to get something done, regardless of who was president and things like that, the guys that had the spiritual maturity and would get out and get after it were those five guys that I spent 10 hours a week with. So a fellow got up noonday one day, and they decided they'd have a box supper for summer missions. They weren't going to invite the outside world in this early, but just so in a fun way, they'd have a box supper, and it'd take place at the social, and we'd give to summer missions that way. But that's all right with me. And so a fellow got a new deal and said, now y'all be sure and bring at least $2 or $2.50 to the deal. So we got in Bible study that day. I said, fellas, did y'all hear that announcement today? Well, yeah, they did. I said, I guarantee you nobody's going to buy that first box for $2.50. And what I'd encourage you to do is you pray and determine before God what He wants you to do for summer missions. And let's be there Friday night. So they did that. So they got the first box up. Now let's start it at $1. So somebody said $1, and that one of the guys, $2, $3, $4, $10, $15, $20, $20. Boy, they just sat there. They couldn't believe it. And that's the way the first six boxes went. And then we stopped and said, now wait a minute. I thought, it was my understanding on the council CIFA, that when we decided to do this way, we were going to determine what God wanted us to give and give in this way. Is that right? I thought we were here because we felt like God wanted us to do this. Boy, they look around. And that night, we raised $1,200 in one deal. And then next year, they wanted to do the slave sale. So next year, I thought, well, as far as I'm concerned, why don't we just tell them, you know, the biblical deal. If somebody wants money, man, I'd rather come and say, Max, here's what I'm doing. Won't you pray and determine? So this past spring at our spring retreat, our students gave $9,200 for our missions offering. And what we do is we just tell them, and it took 15 minutes. And one of the reasons for it is because I think they're growing and they're studying the Bible, and last year they gave over $6,000. They pledged $6,000 and gave almost $10,000. We give $300 a month to different BSU directors that we send out and this type of thing. It's just a matter if you want to Mickey Mouse around all the time and try to come up on their blind side and all that. But get them growing and they'll respond. You know, money follows ministry. And you minister to them and meet some of their needs. So, I don't know. I hope this doesn't sound hard, but it grieves me to think that we have students coming out year after year and they are at an absolute loss as how to function in this world. They don't know how to make disciples. They're not even sure what one is. And nobody's met with them and helped them all down this line. And I feel like over a period of time with your organizational responsibilities, and many times when we met with these guys, we would meet after dark. You don't have to get up in the house and say, I'm only going to meet with five of you. But we'd go out to the dorm, and much of the time I got with Brett was sitting out in the car about midnight, you know, in front of the dorm after we'd been out to witness. Or something like this. Individual personal time with them. And tomorrow we'll go into the principles and see. I know today we've not used many verses, but we'll get into a bunch of them tomorrow about how this works. But I want you to see something of the overall philosophy and plan. And this helps me because I couldn't give time. And the way I think most BSU set up are, you have a crisis ministry. I mean, here's a girl, she lost her boyfriend, she'll come in crying, you help her. Well, next week it may be another one or something. But see, if you could give your time to building strong disciples, they in turn could do this, they in turn could do this. Now, these kids out here are getting help now, but it's not primarily from me. And so that's what I think will work. It'll work for a student when he gets out in the world or anything. He'll have contacts, he'll have a ministry to a broad group of people, a helping ministry, and then he'll have a training ministry with some of the ones that need. Like Dr. Kenneth Chapin once said, it's time that we had something in the church that's not for everybody. He said, everything we have is for everybody. Everybody come to Sunday school, everybody come training, everybody come worship service. They don't. But somewhere along the line, we need to do what Jesus did and what Paul did and get a few people and train them. And it's not because we're not interested in the masses. Before we started this, we had 35 Vespers. We really did when we first started. The day was we had a large number noonday and they started having classes during noonday and that hurt that. Very badly. But the idea is now, these people that are coming out here are out of the Bible studies and somebody's ministered to them. And now, any question before we go? When were we supposed to quit? 7:50, 3 minutes ago. Okay? Remember that about the profile. Don't just go passing it around. Use it yourself if it's helpful to you. And then tomorrow we'll go into some other principles. And thank you for being here. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll quit. Father, we thank you that we have the privilege of being your servants. And it's our desire. It grieves us. I know it does me and I know it does these other people. To go over on the campus and we see people we've never even seen before. And Lord, we know that a lot of those people could be reached, and yet we're frustrated. We try to have a program, and we've reached some. But I pray that you'd give us the wisdom and the heart not to turn people off, but to find those a way to minister to all those we can get to come to our meetings, and even those that won't, through doing Bible studies as much as possible. But then to find those who really mean business and give our lives to them so that we can reproduce and we can have other people spiritually qualified to have a ministry in the lives of people. So, Lord, I pray that you'd lead each person here today as far as the rest of their day, as far as the people they meet, the ideas they embrace, and that we might come back tomorrow, Lord, with renewed encouragement and eagerness to learn all that we can about making disciples, because we've asked it in your name. Amen.